Representative Paulus.
Mr. Speaker and members of this assembly, if I've ever felt tempted to stand up and say it's a good bill and it ought to pass, it's right now. But I don't want to approach this in a flippant manner because I agree with Senator or Representative Fadley. I too think it's a very serious question, not because what it will do for me, either if it's passed or if it fails, because I suspect it's going to have very little effect on my life one way or the other. But I think it's serious business because it purports or seeks to amend the United States Constitution, and that's something that we should all look at very carefully. The Constitution is the most important man-made document or man-made anything in your life and mine. It dictates everything that we do. It controls everything we do. But it doesn't control what we think. And I think right here is a very important distinction that has to be made today. I think I can separate the Equal Rights Amendment from the women's movement for you. And I want to try to do that because I think it'll make some of you feel a little more comfortable. And it gets to the heart of the issue. The women's movement purports to change attitudes, and I support that movement wholeheartedly. It seeks to change attitudes about social relationships between men and women and how men think of women. But that's not what the Equal Rights Amendment does. The Equal Rights Amendment seeks to tell the government how it views me. Today, I don't care, really, how you think of me or what your attitude is, but I do care what the government thinks of me, and that's what we want to change. Now, I suppose that most of you will think that our trouble all started when someone said way back then, all men are created equal. And that really isn't the basis of our problem. The basis of our problem today and what the Equal Rights Amendment speaks to is the 14th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. And it says, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor to deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of its laws. Now, there's where the rub comes in. The United States Supreme Court's function is to interpret the Constitution to see that our activities and the laws that we pass stay within the limits and meet the tests of this Constitution. Now, if you and I sat down together and read the United States Constitution, I don't think there's a person in this room or in the gallery that would not think, if they looked at Mr. McCoy and Mr. Elliott and me, that we're not persons. I know I'm a person, you know I'm a person. I know he's a person and he knows it. The United States Supreme Court has been a long time coming to that conclusion. The United States Supreme Court has always said that Mr. Elliott is a person. Not because he's smarter. He is smarter and he's better looking than we are, but that's not why. The reason that they've said that is because he is white and he is male. Now, Mr. McCoy ran up and down this country for years saying, I'm a person, I'm a person. And every time he thought he had the United States Supreme Court's attention, it would slip away. So he looked in a desperate kind of anger. He set fire to their courthouse. And just as they smelled the smoke, they saw Mr. McCoy, and they looked him over and said, yes, you are a person. He doesn't have that problem. He doesn't have that problem. The Supreme Court has always said that Mr. Elliott is a person. It said that he was a chattel, and it said that I was a child. And it still says, in many respects, that I am a child. Now, all this amendment does today, it doesn't talk about bathrooms, it doesn't talk about opening car doors, lighting cigarettes, husbands and wives. It speaks to how the United States government and its Supreme Court looks at me as in relationship to a person. This directive is one from the state of Oregon that will tell the United States Supreme Court very respectfully that the next time you have occasion to interpret the 14th Amendment and you look at the word person, that we in Oregon think that person means woman. Now, that we're all constitutional lawyers, I would like to tell you two or three things in relationship to the Oregon law. There have been many statements made about Oregon's law and in relationship to other laws. The opponents to this measure say that it will change a man's duty to support his family. It will change a man's duty as far as the custody of children. And I will tell you, gentlemen, and I direct my attention to you, gentlemen, that Oregon has already done that. And every one of you that is sitting in this chamber today, that sat here last year with the exception of Mr. Johnson from Redmond, voted for that. Mr. Johnson was excused. Now, during the last session of the legislature, we said that when the courts are determining which parent gets the custody of a child, that it will not look to the rights of the parents. It will look to the best interests of the child. The law used to be in Oregon that the mother had the right to a child, and we have a law on our books that said even if a mother is a prostitute, she should still get the possession of that child. Now, that doesn't make common sense to me, and I'm sure it doesn't to you, and it didn't to the Oregon Supreme Court. And they rejected that a long time ago. The Oregon State Legislature rejected that theory, said that it would look at the benefits of the child, the interest of the child. So the ERA amendment doesn't change our law. We've progressed. It doesn't change the duty of a father or a husband to support his family. Oregon law has already said that my obligation to support my children and their education and their expenses is just as great as that of my husband's. It also says now that if there is a divorce in the family, that the court will look to the age, the health, the working capacity, earning capacity of both parties. It will look to the inheritance of both parties. It will look to the salaries, and then it will make the decision. And I think that's a good one. Now, the other issue that I think that is important to look at as far as the legal aspects, and the one that is touted by the opponents most vociferously, is what the draft laws would be. There's no question but what the passage of the ERA amendment would do to the draft laws. It would make my daughter as subject to the draft as my son. But the basic premise of the draft is that one owes a duty to one's country to serve and protect it. Now, for the life of me, I can't see why my son's duty to his country is greater than my daughter's. She might have to exercise it in a different way because of her talents or her physical characteristics, but the duty is the same. 2 weeks ago, I was a guest of the federal government in Washington, D.C., where I had not been before. I was invited to a luncheon along with 800 or 900 other people to hear Mr. Justice Rehnquist. And it occurred to me that I might get more inspiration if I went to the Thomas Jefferson Memorial. And I did. And for those of you that have been there, I would like to remind you of what's etched in the walls there. There are four of the most profound statements of President Jefferson. And there is one there in that memorial that I think is very, very pertinent today. And this is what he said. I am not an advocate for frequent changes in laws and constitutions, but laws and institutions must go hand in hand with the progress of the human mind. As that becomes more developed, more enlightened, as new discoveries are made, new truths discovered, and manners and opinions change, with the change of circumstances, institutions must advance also to keep pace with the times. Now, only a fool would say any more after that. Thank you.